is where we are. It's our last chapter in the book of 2 Samuel, which, by the way, if y'all been thinking any more about the book of the Bible, y'all might want to study after we get through with 2 Samuel. Do y'all want to go right on into the next books, 1st, 2nd Kings, or do y'all want to go somewhere else and study, or go right on through? Any other suggestions? Brother Roush made one, but I just ignored what he said. He wants me to teach through the book of Song of Solomon. If y'all have ever read Song of Solomon, you know why I have ignored that. That is for personal consumption, is what that's for. All right, I'm giving y'all a chance to speak up. Anyhow, 2 Samuel chapter 24, and this is another one of those passages that, to me anyway, is kind of strange, just the way it all unfolds. And I think you'll understand why I say that as we go through the chapter. But in verse number 1 it says, and again, notice the word again. Every word in the Bible, in the Bible, is important. Every word. It says, and again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. The reason it says again is because he had been angry with them several times prior to this time. And notice it says the anger of the Lord, which is something we've referenced and talked about on other occasions. It clearly shows this passage, along with all sorts of passages in the Old Testament and the New Testament, that the Lord gets angry. Now, as I've mentioned, the Bible does say that the Lord is slow to anger, and that's a good thing. And that really is how the Lord wants us to be. The Bible does not tell us to not be angry. In fact, the Bible commands us to be angry. It says, be ye angry. But then it says, and sin not. So when you're angry, you have to be careful that you don't sin. But the Bible does not tell us not to be angry. It tells us to get angry. And if you look at the Lord in the Scripture, you see that many times the Lord got angry. Now, as I said, he's slow to anger, just like he wants us to be, but he will get angry. You can push the right buttons and make the Lord mad. And that's something that Israel did many times in their history. Many times they pushed the right buttons, so to speak. They did things that really upset the Lord, and he got angry. And whenever the Lord gets angry, especially you read in the Old Testament, you see that there's usually punishment to follow. Something comes from that. And you see that even in the New Testament. If I can remind you of a story in the New Testament of when Jesus went into the temple, y'all remember that? And he saw those people doing things in the temple that they didn't need to do. Y'all remember what he did? He made him a little whip. And he drove the people and the animals out of the temple, and he overthrew the money changers' tables and that sort of thing. He's upset. That's the actions of a person who's upset, but it's not the actions of a person who's out of control, who is sinning. He's completely in control, and it's a righteous indignation. He's upset about the sin that's going on in his father's house. That's a good thing to be upset about. But you see there a demonstration of him getting upset and him showing his anger. And there's other places where you see that as well. But you have here another instance of where the Lord got mad with Israel. Now, here's the thing. It does not say right here what the Lord got angry about. It doesn't specify right here in the context. So I'm not sure what it was. I know it was something, but I don't know what it was on this particular occasion that made the Lord mad. But here's the part to me that is somewhat strange. It says, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he, the Lord, moved David, David's their king, against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. So the Lord moves David against his people. The reason he's against them at this time, or wants David moved against them, is because he's angry with them. Okay, I understand that. But it says he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. And what it's talking about is him getting a consensus. You understand what I'm talking about? Getting a consensus, not of all of the people of Israel and Judah, but of the military people within Israel and Judah. And you'll see that as we get on down here a little bit later on in some of these other verses. He's wanting a consensus of how many military people he had in Israel and Judah. And David follows through with this, even though he's counseled not to do it by Joab and certain other of his captains. He follows through with this and he does it. And the Lord doesn't approve of what David does here. It's not a good thing. David does this, and it's a sin, because what he does here in demanding that the people be numbered, he does it in pride. It's pride of heart. You know, you read it and you wonder, well, what's the big deal? What's the problem with him wanting to know how many military he has? Well, under certain circumstances, it wouldn't be a problem. But in this case, it's just a matter of pride in his heart. It's like, you know, I want to number how many we have so I can boast about the military strength and might that we have. It's a prideful thing, and God is always against pride. But what's strange in that is that it's the Lord that moves David to do this. But now, let me show you this. Hold your place right here and go over a couple of books to 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Here in 1 Chronicles chapter 21, you have another account of this same story. But it brings out some things that you don't get back here in 2 Samuel chapter 24. In 1 Chronicles chapter 21, look at verse number 1. Now notice what it says here. And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. Now there it says that it was the devil, Satan, that provoked him to number Israel, right? Back in 2 Samuel 24, it says it was the Lord that moved David. And here's another good instance of how people will read those two passages and say, see, the Bible contradicts itself and that sort of thing. But once again, if you just think about it a little bit and use some common sense, you kind of figure some of these things out. You don't have to have this real high education, real high IQ to figure some of these things out. It's just a matter of using good common sense. Can you think of a way to reconcile the two passages where in one place it says David was moved by the Lord, but then in this one it says Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel? Here's what I think about it, okay? I believe it was both. It was both. You say, how could it be both? Well, it could be just this simple. The Lord allowed the devil to provoke David. Y'all follow that? It could be just that simple. It goes back ultimately to the Lord, because he's the one that allowed the devil, so that's why it says that the Lord moved David. But oftentimes what God does is he permits certain people to do things, or he allows certain things to take place. A good illustration of God allowing the devil to do something that you could sort of put back on him is the story of Job. Y'all remember that story? Well, hold your place. You can go back to 2 Samuel now. But go over to the book of Job with me just for a moment, and I want to show you something here. Job chapter 1. In Job chapter 1, it says in verse 6, "And there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job?" Now look at that. The Lord said unto Satan. Who initiated the conversation about Job? The Lord did. And he's talking to the devil. But he's the one that brings up Job. So obviously there's something going on here, because he wouldn't just bring him up for no reason. He brings him up for a reason. And he says, "Hast thou considered my servant Job? There is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil." Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." So the Lord brings up Job. I believe that he brought him up for a purpose. He intended for all this stuff here to happen in Job's life, or he'd have never brought him up. But he brings him up to the devil, and the devil says, "Well, look, the only reason Job's the kind of fella he is because of how good you've been to him. You stop being good, and you take away all that stuff you gave him, you watch what he does. He'll curse you to your face in a minute." So you know what the Lord does? He says, "I accept that challenge. I believe that is exactly what God intended from the very start. That is why he brought Job up to the devil. He knew what was going to go on in his thing, and he intended for Satan to test Job." Because you look at what he says in verse 12, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Job went forth from the presence of the Lord." And you see the same basic conversation in the next chapter. But all that stuff that happened in Job's life, who did that? The devil did it, right? I mean, the devil was the one that performed all of the things, the bad things that happened in Job's life. But do you understand he could not do any of that without permission from the Lord? God permitted him to do that, or he could not have done it. That's why you read what you do there where he says, "Look, all that he's got is in your hand. You just don't touch his life." He's saying, "You can have the stuff. You can do what you want to with Job's stuff. You just can't have his life." And you see the same type of conversation in the next chapter. But God is the one that brought Job up and allowed the devil to do all that stuff in his life. And to me, it's the same situation in this story with David. God had a certain thing he wanted to accomplish, so he moved David against Israel. But the means that he used to move David against Israel was who? The devil. Y'all understand that? That's how you reconcile those things. It was the devil that provoked David. But why was he able to provoke David to number the people? Because God allowed that to happen. God had decided to do this, and he said, "I'm going to let the devil be the instrument that's going to provoke him." That's what's going on here. But anyway, back in 2 Samuel chapter 24, in verse 2 it says, "For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host," we've studied about Joab a lot, "which was with him, Go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba." That's from one end of the land to the other. If you look at a map of the land, Dan is in one end and Beersheba's in the other. So he's saying, "Look, I want you to go through the whole land from the north to the south, the top to the bottom, and I want you to get a number. And number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people." And Joab said unto the king, "Now the Lord thy God add unto the people how many soever they be, an hundredfold." He says, "Ever how many the people are now, I pray God to add to that 100-fold, 100 times that many, and that the eyes of my Lord the King may see it. So I pray that you get to see God multiplies people 100-fold. But why doth my Lord the King delight in this thing? Here is an instance, and we've saw a lot of instances where what Joab did was not good. He did some terrible things. But here is an instance where Joab is being rational. He's trying to talk to David and say, you know, you're not doing the right thing here. There's no point in this. It's just all a matter of pride in your heart. We have no need for this right now. Don't do it. He's just trying to talk some sense to reason with David in this. But you got the devil there that's provoking him. With God's permission, you got the devil there that's provoking him. And David succumbs to that provocation. He gives in to it. And he won't listen. And sometimes that's how we are, isn't it? Sometimes that's how we are. People try to talk to us and reason with us and tell us things. Look, you know, you're making a mistake here. You're going in the wrong direction. You don't need to do that. But we've sort of made up our mind, and a lot of times behind the scenes there, we may not even realize it, but behind the scenes is the devil. He's the one provoking us and trying to get us to go in a bad direction, and we just won't listen. We won't listen. We allow ourselves to be deceived by the devil, by the pride of our heart, and we just press on and wind up doing something that we don't need to do, and something, as we'll see later on in this story, that not only hurts us but hurts other people as well. And that's the situation here. Verse number 4, it says, notwithstanding the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host. So it wasn't just Joab. According to that, other captains tried to talk to David and reason with him, tell him, look, you don't need to do this. No point in it. But it says his word, the king's word, prevailed. Why did his word prevail? Because he was the king. That's the reason why his word prevailed. They eventually realize, look, David's made up his mind, so there's nothing we can do about it. They leave him be. And sometimes that's what you have to do. It breaks your heart to have to do it because you understand that if the person continues down that road, they're only going to hurt themselves and hurt other people. But after you've talked to somebody so many times and you realize they've made up their mind, you just have to leave them alone. There's nothing else you can do. And that's a sad thing. It's a sad thing. It's, you know, I've seen it a lot of times in the ministry. People that come to you and want to talk about things, and you talk to them, and you try to give them good counsel and good advice from the Bible, not your opinion, but from the Bible. And you say, look, now, you don't need to go down that road. And they've just made up their mind. They're going to do it, come hell or high water, like we say. They're just going to do it or bust. And you know what you have to do sometimes as a pastor? You just have to let them go. Because there's nothing else you can do. Sometimes you have to do that with your own family, with friends. And it's a sad thing because you can see it. They can't see it at the time. They've been blinded by their pride or by whatever. They don't see it and they won't listen. They just keep on. And later on, they realize they've made a boo-boo. Sometimes they've done something a lot worse than a boo-boo. It kind of reminds me, I did that funeral today for Mr. Jimmy Smith, and I went to meet with the family on Monday, and Miss Birdie Mae was kind of telling me some stories and talking to me about Jimmy. And one thing she shared with me is how that he, when he signed up or wanted to join the Navy, he was 17, so he was still... He still had to get consent from his parents. He wasn't old enough to join by himself. And in the beginning, his mother wouldn't sign. She didn't want him to go. But eventually she came around and he joined the Navy when he was 17. It was back in 1955, I believe. And he wanted to go, and he went. But he just pestered her and just stayed on her. I want to go. And well, she didn't want him to go, but he just stayed on her. And finally she said, all right, she signed it, and he went. And she said that about a week and a half or 2 weeks later, he called back home and said, I have made a horrible mistake. He said, I have really messed up. But it's too late then, you know. Maybe Mama saw something that he didn't see at the time. Mamas have a way of doing that, don't they? seeing things that we can't see. But that's kind of how we are sometimes, or other people are. You know, they just get fixated, get tunnel vision. I'm going to do it. That's just the way it's going to be. And no matter what anybody says, they just go on and do it. And David's that way, you know. But again, it's a spiritual thing. The Bible talks in the New Testament about how we don't wrestle with flesh and blood. Now we see flesh and blood. We see people. We don't see Satan and those principalities and powers and those rulers of the darkness and spiritual wickedness that's provoking us. David is clueless at this point that the devil is provoking him. It was a spiritual thing, and many times that's the way it is in a person's life. When they're going in a direction they don't need to go and they won't listen, it's a spiritual thing. The devil's working on them, and they're going in that direction because of it, and they won't listen to anybody. And here, David won't listen. So they conceded, and verse 4 says, Joab and the captains of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. And they passed over Jordan, that's over the Jordan River, because there were some people on the other side. If you remember when they came into the land, there were a couple of tribes, 2.5 tribes, that got their inheritance on that side of Jordan, and the rest got their inheritance the other side of Jordan. So they go over the Jordan, and they pitched in Aroer on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river of Gad and toward Jazer. Then they came to Gilead and to the land of Tittim Hodshi, and they came to Danjon and about to Zidon, and came to the stronghold of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hivites and of the Canaanites. And they went out to the south of Judah, even to Beersheba. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. So how long did it take them? 9 months and 20 days to go from Dan to Beersheba. All through the land. But finally, after 9 months and 20 days, they make it back to Jerusalem, and they have got the number. Verse 9, and Joab gave up the sum of the number of the people under the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. Now again, this is not a consensus of every single individual. It's a consensus of the military people. And you know that because look at what it says. And there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword. You see that? So this is just him getting a record or account of his military. And again, it's just a pride thing, but it's the devil provoking him with the Lord's permission. Because the whole context, the thing you can't forget, the very first verse in the chapter sets the context for what you read here. It's because God was angry with Israel. That's why this is going on, because he's upset. And he's wanting to get to them, and he is going to do that. It just, the reason why it seems strange to me, and I'm not questioning God, because here's what I know, he's right in everything he does. If I don't understand it, that's not his problem, okay? That's on me. It's just a limitation on my part that I can't fully understand why God does things the way he does. And there's a lot of places in the Bible where I read and I see God doing something, and I don't really understand why he did it the way he did it. And some people want to take issue with that. I don't take issue with that. I just know he's God. He's in control. He can do it ever how he chooses to, and ever how he chooses to do it is right 100% of the time. That's the way I feel about it. That's how I approach everything in the Bible that I read. That's how I approach things in life. I just believe God is right. Amen? Whether we understand it or not. And I always keep in mind that he doesn't have to run things by me. Y'all got that? It's like sometimes we have this false sense of entitlement as Christians. Like he owes it to us to explain everything to us that he does in our life or allows in our life or in the life of somebody else. You know, he doesn't owe that to me. Don't have that false sense of entitlement like he owes it to you. He doesn't have to run anything by you at all. He's God, right? So he doesn't have to run it by. He can just do it, and there'll be times. Has there not been times already in your life where the Lord did something you didn't understand? You don't know why he did it that way? You don't know why that situation worked out the way it did? Hadn't that been that way? Well, you know, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but that's probably going to happen a lot more in your life. But here's the thing. Can't you look back, sitting where you are now? Can't you look back on a lot of those situations, maybe not everyone, but a lot of those situations, and see now how all that stuff worked together for good? You couldn't when you was in it. You didn't understand it then, but you do now, a lot of it. So that's the thing. God does stuff, and you know, I don't understand this. What I don't understand is, look, if he's angry with Israel, just get them. If you want to get them, just get them. Why provoke David and get him involved and all that kind of stuff? Just get them. Just do that. So I don't understand the whole thing. Maybe it was also kind of a test for David to see if he would give in to the pride of his heart. Maybe it was to see if he would give in to the provocation of the devil. Do you know what it says back in the book of Deuteronomy that when the people of Israel were wandering around out there in that wilderness, that the Lord tried them, he proved them to see whether or not they would be obedient to his word? You know sometimes why God lets the devil get after you, do things in your life? It's just a test for you to see if you're going to be faithful, if you're going to still do right, even when things happen in a way that you don't like. Just a test. Maybe some of that's going on here with David. Maybe it's just a test on his part as well. The Lord can do more than one thing at a time, can't he? You know, he can get Israel through David and work on David at the same time. He's more than able to do more than one thing at a time. But now look here at verse 10. It says, and David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. It's like he realizes, I shouldn't have done that. And he's under conviction about it. He feels bad. His heart smites him. He's hurting inside. He knows he's messed up. Should have listened to Joab. I should have. And this is what he says. And David said unto the Lord, I have sinned greatly in that I have done. Once again, you see how David was when it came to his sin. And that's the thing that I've mentioned to you before and that I see time and time again about David. I don't see a perfect man when I look at David. I see a man that was flawed in a lot of ways, just like we are. I see a man that messed up a lot in his life, several times in his life. But the thing that stands out to me about David time and time again is that when he did wrong and he was confronted about wrong, whether God sent a person to confront him or, as in this case, his heart confronts him, either way, what do you see about David? You see a man of repentance, don't you? A man who's willing to admit, I sinned, I did wrong, I shouldn't have done that. And I'm going to tell you, folks, that goes a long way with God. It really does. And it's never, you know, we don't ever need to excuse our wrong, but that goes a long way with the Lord. If you want to see, just look with Saul and David, just those two men right there. Saul did a bunch of bad stuff. He didn't obey God. He's confronted about his sin. Y'all remember what he did when he's confronted about his sin? He blamed the people. Y'all remember that? Them people. They're the reason why I did that. He didn't want to own up. He didn't want to fess up. But each time I read in the Bible where David is confronted by a person or by his heart, you see a man of repentance each time. And that goes a long way with the Lord. It really does. Just being willing, humble enough to say, I have sinned. It's my fault. I don't blame anybody else. It's all on me. Taking responsibility, personal responsibility. And that's what David does here. He says, I have sinned greatly in that I have done. He didn't try to blame anybody for it. He says, I did it. That's a rarity nowadays, isn't it? That's a rare thing to find somebody nowadays that'll just fess up and take responsibility for their actions. Hey, even in church, it's hard to find people that'll do that, admit that they've sinned. We're so worried about our image and reputation in the eyes of other people that our pride won't let us. Pride won't let us admit we've done wrong. But he says, I have sinned greatly in that I have done, and now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. See how he describes all of that? I've sinned greatly the iniquity of thy servant. I have done very foolishly. He's being very detailed in his description of what he did. You ever felt like that before? You ever been talking to the Lord and said, Lord, I just made a fool out of myself. It was just very foolish of me to do what I did. I don't know about y'all, but I have them kind of conversations with the Lord on almost a daily basis. Almost a daily basis I have them conversations with the Lord. Verse 11, for when David was up in the morning, not lunchtime, he got up in the morning. David didn't stay in bed till 12, 1 o'clock in the day. Quiet in here tonight. For when David was up in the morning, the word of the Lord came unto the prophet Gad, David's seer. A seer was a prophet. It's the same thing. Saying, go and say unto David, thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things. I'm going to give you three options here as to how I'm going to deal with you about this. Three options. And bear in mind now the context. Who's he angry with? He's angry with Israel. He's not necessarily angry with David. He's angry with Israel. And he comes here and he says, I'm going to give you three options. Choose thee one of them that I may do it unto thee. Verse 13, so Gad came to David and told him and said unto him, shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land? That's one option. Or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies while they pursue thee? That's two. Or that there be 3 days pestilence in thy land? Number three. Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me. And the one that sent him was the Lord. He says, you think about it. Tell me what to say. Just looking at those three options, just put yourself for a minute in David's position here. Looking at those three options, which one would you choose? If you're the king and you know something, you know it's one of the three. It's not a thing, well, I don't like those three. Give me another option. These are only three options you got. God's going to do one of the three. Which one would you pick? Would you pick 7 years of famine? Would you pick fleeing 3 months before your enemies? Or 3 days of pestilence in the land? Kind of seems like that last one's a little less, you know, 3 days pestilence. But let me tell you something. 3 days pestilence, a lot can happen in 3 days of pestilence, okay? Which one do you think you would choose? David said unto Gad, I am in a great strait. A great strait, straight as it, the word here means tight, tight. He's saying, I am in a real tight spot here. I'm in a tight spot. You ever been in one of those before? Just a tight spot. You know you got to do something, you're just not sure what to do. Well, that's where he's at. He's in a tight spot. I got to make up my mind. I got to pick one of the three. Personally, I wouldn't want any one of them. But that wasn't an option. The Lord didn't say, well, I'm going to give you these three. If you don't like it, okay, I'll just move on. He said, you're going to pick one of the three. David says, I'm in a tight spot here. And this was David's response, which is priceless, beautiful. It's a great response. Let us fall now into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great, and let me not fall into the hand of man. Which kind of takes out the middle one, fleeing in front of his enemies. The other two was basically God's in charge of that. Who would send a famine for 7 years? Man wouldn't be in control of that, would he? That'd be the Lord that would send the famine. Who would send a 3-day pestilence? Well, that wouldn't be man. That'd be God. But what David is doing is he's surveying this thing, and he's looking at it from this perspective. My options are man punishing me or God punishing me. And David says, I'm going to go with the Lord, and I'm going to just give myself to him because I know that his mercies are great. David had already experienced the mercies of the Lord, hadn't he? Many times in his life he had seen the mercy of God, and he had also seen the depravity of man. He had seen both of those things. He saw just how wicked and depraved and horrible man could be and what man would do to you. He says, look, if I got to make a choice, I'm going to go with the Lord, and I'm going to let him deal with me as he sees fit in this situation. And that's what he does. And so what the Lord does is he sends a pestilence upon Israel. He doesn't send the 7-year famine. He sends a pestilence upon Israel from the morning even to the time appointed. So that'd be 3 days. And there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. That's why I said that a lot could happen in 3 days pestilence. Folks, 70,000 people, a lot of folks. And they died in 3 days. And they didn't die by accident. It was the punishment of God. You see what the Lord did there? Remember, who's he angry with? He's angry with Israel. His intent from the very outset of this whole thing was to punish Israel. Who'd he wind up getting to punish? Israel. So he punished. Now, you know, you could say he kind of went about it in a roundabout way. He used the devil and he used David, but he accomplished his purpose. He got done what he wanted to do. He punished Israel for their sin, whatever that sin was on this occasion. Or it could have been a whole bunch of things together. 70,000 men. And we're going to stop here for the sake of time. There's something very interesting about this that I want you to see. We'll talk about that. We'll finish, Lord willing, we'll finish this thing up Sunday morning in Sunday school, and then we'll move on to something else. Any questions about what we looked at?